Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and today I'm joined by, first up, it's John Godis. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic. And also joined by Russell Peddle. How are you, man?
I am also fantastic.
Wonderful. This is going to be a very weird show. Like, we don't have a ton to talk about. Nothing really happened of huge note this week. There isn't any big news. There was that big win over the Portland Trailblazers on Friday. We might touch on that for a little bit. There was the loss to Houston on Sunday night. That was a little disappointing and frustrating. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the defensive issues. And then we got a bunch of questions, a bunch of really weird questions that we'll get to. First, though, I want to ask you guys, are you guys aware of what's going on in Toronto right now with the Pandas?
No.
No.
Okay, so
Didn't Trudeau take a picture with some pandas or something?
Yeah, so there's pandas on loan from China for like 10 years at the Toronto Zoo.
I knew that part.
And they had babies in like October, and I guess now they've just grown to be large enough to like name them and put them out in the public. And so they had like a giant ceremony today where all of the politicians were at the zoo to name these stupid little pandas. I just want to get your panda takes, because I think pandas are stupid. John, are you in on that?
What?
How do you loan a panda? Did we, like, take their pandas or something? Or do we have to give them back at some point?
Yeah, they go back to China at some point. It's supposed to be... I think Toronto Zoo is, like, really known for its great breeding program and stuff, so they wanted to, like... It's also, like, some sort of sign of goodwill. Like, John Tory is supposed to be going to China, like, next week to talk about economic relations, which is really bizarre. But, like, I guess pandas are the bridge of worlds. Yeah. I don't know. We were just, like, talking about it today at work. Just, like, how most people love pandas. I can't stand pandas. They're useless.
At what point did you develop a I hate pandas take? Like, what could have possibly...
Well, so I'm a big... Something you may not know about me. I watch a lot of nature shows, like a lot of nature shows. In school, I took a whole bunch of like environmental science classes and natural science and all that stuff. I was a big, I'm a big, like David Attenborough. If there's one celebrity who I'll be crushed when they die, is David Attenborough. So I don't know. I watch a lot of nature shows. I read a lot about animals and stuff. And pandas are just the most ecologically useless animals on Earth. If they died, like, it wouldn't affect the food chain at all. There would just be more bamboo for us to make floors with. And, like, there would be... Nothing eats them, so nothing would go hungry if they died out. And bamboo shortages would just cease to exist because that's all they do is sit around and eat bamboo. And they're so lazy that they don't even want to have sex. Like, they have to be shown panda porn in order to get randy enough to procreate. So my whole thing is, like, I just don't know why we put so much stock in the panda as like, yo, we had to save pandas. It's so important that we save pandas. Like, it's cool that it's a cute emblem for the WWF, but it's like the least important animal for us to save.
I don't know, man. Like, what are we going to do with the bamboo anyway? Like, are we going to make shitty lawn chairs? Like, we don't need the bamboo. Just give it to the pandas. They look nice. They're good bears. Have you seen red pandas? The little cute red ones?
Oh, don't even get me started on red pandas.
Don't even
those are great.
Well, what's so great about a red panda? It's just a less cute and fuzzy panda.
Yeah, they're smaller, though. Like, I don't know. If you hate all pandas, like, you can't like give me a rationale for why I like certain pandas.
They're like sexy raccoons.
That's stupid.
Yeah, was that because I was coming out of pod where no, there was no harsh, that there would be no like super weird takes. I'm just over here shaking my head about, and here we are talking about pandas being useless. So anyway,
it was just something we were talking about today at work, so I thought I would carry it over because there isn't much to talk about. We have to start with something. But yeah, we'll get to the podcast now. We'll talk about the Raptors defense.
I guess.
We'll talk about Luis Scola's and Jonas Valanciunas' defensive abilities or lack thereof. Talk about Damari Carroll a bit and what he'll bring when he comes back eventually. Hopefully he comes back soon. Bunch of other stuff today. As I said, a bunch of questions, and we have a fantastic episode sponsor for you. So stick around for that. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with John Godis and Russell Peddle. We'll get away from the bear talk and we'll get into some Raptors talk. I guess the big thing on everyone's mind now, it's the topic du jour, is the Raptors' struggling defense. The last 15 games or so, there's been quite a drastic fall off from where they've been for most of the season. You know, I think 15 games ago, they were still a top 10 defense. Now they're 14th ranked at 102.9 points per 100 possessions. But the last 15 games, they've ranked 25th, giving up almost 110 per 100 possessions. They're giving up pretty high 3-point percentage, 38.6 over the last 15. It's fourth worst in the league. They and their starting lineup has been just a disaster, which we'll get to. And yeah, it's just, I think a lot of it stems from the JV Scola thing, and we'll get into that in a second. But I guess just generally starting off, Russell, we'll start with you. Like, what's your level of concern with the Raptors' defense in recent weeks here?
Well, I don't think it's that high. Obviously, I am concerned, and it's bothersome, and it's frustrating to watch the games and see what has been a strong defense for most of the season. Just really, it's lacking effort in certain instances, and it's just, like you said, I think a lot of it comes down to combinations of players that aren't picking up the slack for each other effectively. I don't think I'm as concerned because with it, it's like a season ebbs and flows. And we kind of put too much stock in any given like couple week period. You know, we're talking about, it's basically since the beginning of February that we're basing this concern on, and that they've been 25th, you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. They've also been first in offensive rating, which is something no one's mentioning when talking about how bad the defense is. So yeah, it's like they still have a positive net rating despite having this god awful defensive rating. So, you know, obviously, you know, you want your team to be good at defense, and you can't come playoff time like a team that relies on offense is not something that you can really trust. But at the end of the day, if you score more points than the other team, then, you know, you can still win games, and they've been winning games. So, you know, occasional loss here and there, but nothing like they haven't gotten on a big losing streak or anything. So it is a concern, but it's like, it's not a reason to hit the panic button. Like they've shown that they can play effective defense, and there are some stretches this season where, you know, we've looked at them and like, wow, like they're playing exceptional defense at certain points. And I think that, you know, any combination of things, like the combination of players, like little injuries here and there, Kyle missing a game, like one of the worst games that's playing into that is one where that Lowry wasn't in playing, which, you know, messed up a lot of the rotations and not messed up, but like, you know, made them different. And I don't know. I'm a pretty even keeled person anyway, and I'm not very quick to hit the panic button when stuff like this happens. I would say I'm concerned, but I'm not overly concerned.
Look at Russell, even keel with his basketball and panda takes. John, where's your level of concern at?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Russell. I don't think I'm that concerned, but I am a little bit concerned with, you know, the time of year and how it's, you know, it seems to be happening all over again like it did last year. It's just you don't want history to repeat itself, and there's two different factors obviously this year. The one is obviously the possible return of Damari Carroll, the likely return of Damari Carroll in the near future, whether it's in the regular season or for the playoffs. So that's obviously going to be a huge boost when he comes back, and we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But the other thing is that you have a rotation that can adjust. You can limit the fact that Luis Scola and Jonas Valanciunas play so many minutes together. The last few games, the ones that they've given up the most points to have been to guards who have taken advantage of Scola and Valanciunas in pick and roll, mostly Valanciunas. Lillard did it on Friday, and Harden did it, obviously, last night. And going back a ways, they played, you know, Minnesota's a top five defense, or a top five offense rather, in the last 15 games or so. So they've kind of hit the buzzsaw with teams who can attack their weaknesses. But I think like it's a weakness that's fixable, right? And we talk about this every week, it seems like, when I've been on the show, that you can just put Patrick Patterson in the starting lineup and it limits so many of these possible opportunities for the other team to attack you. Like last year, when you went to the bench, and last year was the guard defense that was the issue, you were putting in Lou Williams, who was just as poor defensively, and Gravis Vasquez, who was even worse. But on this year's team, you have a solution, and I think that it's time now that we explore this solution, because if it keeps spiraling like this, we're going to start, you know, feeling like last year the team's going to lose its confidence. This homestand was supposed to be a great opportunity for them, and things aren't feeling that great. I mean, you give up 50 to Lillard, 40 to Harden in a loss, and, you know, you don't want things to get worse. I think it's, you know, high time to make that move.
Yeah, and I think part of the last couple games there with Lillard and Harden is just those guys being really good at making ridiculous shots, right? And, you know, that's the same thing that kind of happened with Jimmy Butler back a couple months ago, where, you know, he scored 50 points and like 40 points in a quarter and a half or whatever, and it was troubling, but like
they made
it wasn't something that you can't count on that repeating itself over and over again.
But they made ridiculous shots after they had gotten into the flow of, you know, what they want to do. I mean,
right.
The Raptors are allowing other teams basically a 6-minute spot at the beginning of games to get into whatever it is they want to do. And it's showing up at the end of games because guys are in their flow. They're playing, you know, they've had a bit of confidence. They've seen what the Raptors are giving to them. So they're making ridiculous shots at the end, sure, because the Raptors always ratchet it up at the end of games, and that's worked for them. I think they're like a top three, like, clutch defensive team right now in the NBA over a high number of games. And sometimes that, you know, it's worked for them a lot, but sometimes it just doesn't come through. And we saw that with Houston.
Yeah. And like, so yeah, my whole thing, like you mentioned, I think the issues are fixable. It's not just the switching Patterson for Scola thing. I think it feels like once James Johnson's not in there anymore, once Damari Carroll comes back, and especially if it's a Damari Carroll, Patrick Patterson combo, like, the pick and roll defense should improve. The perimeter defense should improve. There should be, you know, DeRozan should be exposed less. He's been pretty bad defensively lately, but he should be exposed less, you would hope, when he's not playing next to a gambler like James Johnson. And I think Harsh mentioned this last night too. Like, he's noticed that DeRozan's gambling a lot on defense lately as well. And I don't know if that's a, like, I just don't think the issues are systemic with the team. I think the personnel is a lot better. They have way more defensive options that they can go to. Last year, you turned to the bench, and, you know, Patterson wasn't the defender he was last year. You had those two guards, and, you know, even Amir Johnson, like, he was kind of banged up all season long with the ankles, and he wasn't the same defender he had been in the previous five seasons with the Raptors. And I do think, you know, I've cooled off a little bit on just like the begging of Casey to change the starting lineup, because I can understand where he's coming from to a degree. I mean, they're 41-20. Why would you rock the boat and change everything up when, you know, you're going to have Damari Carroll coming back soon anyway, and that's going to change things as well. Like, why not just kind of stay the course for now, and then once you have to make a switch in the playoffs, I think he realizes that he'll have to make a switch in the playoffs, because the numbers with Scola and Valanciunas together are startling. I mean, the last 15 games together, they're a minus 18.4 net rating with 118.9 defensive rating. Like, it's brutal. So, it's pretty horrendous.
I just don't want the situation again where, you know, he puts Hansbrough in the starting lineup in game two to try to fix the problem, and by then it's way too late, right?
Yeah, I totally get that too. But also, I think there's something to be said for just sort of riding out for now in the regular season. And then once Carroll comes back, maybe you make all the changes at once. And then you're going into the playoffs suddenly with a starting lineup featuring Carroll and Patterson that doesn't really have any tape on it at all. Teams don't know how to attack it as much as they would this Scola thing. And then that's what you roll into the playoffs with. I think the team is, like, last year the team was just riddled with bad chemistry, it felt like, and none of the pieces really fit. This year, you've seen that a lot of different lineup combinations work, and the guys seem to be able to play together kind of no matter what, you know, lineup Casey throws out there in a lot of cases, aside from this Scola Valanciunas thing for obvious reasons. But, like, Patterson seems to be able to play with any of the bigs, and I think Carroll's the kind of guy who fits in nicely too. And yeah, I'm not totally worried, because I think the issues are very, very fixable, and I have faith in Casey to realize, like, just every metric on Scola and the eye test on Scola too is just like, he's not getting it done at all on either end. And like, he hit two threes, it was like the first threes he hit in February, hit since like February 1st or something, in last night's game against Houston. So yeah, I think these issues are fixable. I think it's probably just a lull in the regular season, and like, the Twitter just melting down whenever there's a bad Raptors game. I almost have to just like log off sometimes because I'm just like, you know what? Like they're 41-20. Like these things happen. Like, have you seen the Cavs? Like,
it's all
that dysfunction?
It's all instant gratification. It's like in this recency bias of like, oh my God, they gave up this many points and they lost a game and they should have won. They're such a weak team. And then it's like, they're going to pull off four games in a row and beat like at least within that one or two good opponents. Then everyone's going to be back. Like, could this be a conference final team again? Like, it's just, you have to have a bit more of a measured response when it comes to evaluating your team. And you've got 60 games to base it on. Like, it's 61 games. It's not, there's no need to overreact to a month at a time, you know? It's, but the funny thing, I going back to your point about the combinations and things like that, what's funny is looking back at the beginning of the season when they were talking about, like, would they start Scola or Patterson? And the big talk was like, okay, well, which one fits best with Biombo and which one fits best with Valanciunas? And it's like, we've established, like, without a shadow of a doubt, that Valanciunas and Scola do not go well together because they do not hide each other's defensive deficiencies. Whereas like, it seems crazy that like, as you said, the eye test and the metrics all say that that's true, and yet nothing has been done to change that. And like, you know, even you can look at the fact that Scola starts but doesn't play a lot of minutes. But then at the same time, they've over the, like, this period where they've been really bad defensively, they've still played, those two have played 213 minutes together, whereas like Patterson and Valanciunas, for example, have only played 135.
Yes.
February 1st. So it's like, like, for example, the Patterson Valanciunas net rating since February 1st is 12.5, and the Scola Valanciunas one, like you mentioned, is negative 18. I think you did 15 games. My search here is for 14, but the point remains, like, the team is just worse when those two play together. And yeah, like you said, all fixable problems. And the addition of Carroll is going to make a huge difference, because one of the things is people are, I think, might be thinking of Damari Carroll as the often injured Raptor version of Damari Carroll, and forgetting that, you know, having given him the chance to heal and come in perfectly healthy, if he comes back and is the Hawks version of Damari Carroll from last season on a 60-win team, then all of a sudden, and especially the playoffs when he really came out and was like a scoring option as well, like like, people are you know, upset maybe that nothing happened to the trade deadline, but what better late season acquisition than a Damari Carroll hybrid wing forward that can, you know, play the four in a pinch? Like, we're talking about how not having a power forward, like, Damari Carroll comes back, he can be our power forward. You know?
Yeah, and he cuts, yeah, he would cut so much into the minutes that Scola is playing. Like, I mean, let's do it right now. Like, if you were to put an over under on, like, minutes per game Scola plays in the playoffs, I would probably put it like under 9.5. Like, John, where would you go on that?
Yeah, I was just gonna bring that up too. Like, they could even go to an 8-man rotation for most of the game, where it's just Ross and Joseph coming off the bench, because those are their great players, right? I mean, they even close games with the lineup with Patterson and Valanciunas in the lineup, and that's when they really kill teams. So. I don't know. I think he's still probably going to be a 12 to 13 minute a night guy, but you know, the closer the game, I think the more run that Patterson is going to get. And they really haven't run out Carroll much at the four because of the injury issues. And if like Russell said, he comes back completely healthy, that's a viable option too, depending on the matchup in the first round and whatnot.
Well, yeah, that's another thing too, right? Like, they started the season, their crunch time lineup early on was going small with Carroll at the four, and it was DeRozan at the three plus the two point guards, and then either Valanciunas or Biombo, and like, Patterson's not even involved there. So if you're worried about like overexerting Patterson's minutes by starting him, like, Carroll helps a lot of that. I think the end of the result of this conversation is you should realize that Damari Carroll is going to be huge for this team.
He's a good basketball player. A lot of people are forgetting that.
He's pretty good.
No one looked at really, really and truly, like, no one looked at the $15 million he's getting per year and went, ugh. Like,
exactly.
He's worth that.
Sort of, oh, yeah, that's what those guys cost.
Yeah.
So to, like, switch this to the Jason Thompson talk, I mean, like, Jason Thompson's not starting. Don't get any illusions there. Although he probably fits better next to Valanciunas than he does next to Biombo, just because Thompson's kind of a nothing on offense, and at least he's a bit more mobile defensively than Scola. But, like, he's not starting. And I don't know if you want to see a Thompson and Biombo front court as a bench unit. Are you interested in seeing that at all? Are you interested in seeing, you know, maybe some sort of staggered lineups with Thompson and Valanciunas playing together with some bench guys? Or, like, Russell, are you hoping to see more Thompson in place of Scola, or are you thinking that if, like, maybe Scola is switched to that bench role, he, you know, Biombo covers up for him more and Joseph creates for him more, and he's getting some of the offensive opportunities he had to, you know, sort of like at the start of games, like against the Houston game, where he was, you know, kind of a first option early on, like he can kind of find that offensive niche on the bench? Is that sort of what you're thinking there?
I don't know if it's just because I'm, like, I haven't been following necessarily, like, the press quotes on Thompson's role with the team, but I mean, to me, he's basically taking over the Bennett role, and I don't see him really carving out many minutes, especially when Carroll gets back. I think he's more of just insurance than anything else. I don't see him necessarily carving out a role where we're going to have to talk about a combo of Thompson and Biombo or Thompson and whoever else, because I don't know where the minutes are going to come from. In a vacuum or in a, like, a bunch of us Scola haters or want him to take minutes from Scola, but that's not going to happen. Scola does have some touch on the offensive end when he's obviously he's been struggling, but like that, he's not a nothing player. Like he's an NBA serviceable NBA player, and Thompson's someone who's been, you know, cut by teams. Like, it's not the same level of player. Like, we can talk ourselves into Thompson as this savior or something, but he's really a better roster filler than Anthony Bennett, and that's
for sure.
And that's about as far as it's going to go, because he's got basically no offensive game, and you, as much as you can put him in there for a little, you know, maybe a defensive possession here and there, like, I don't see him as anything more than garbage time or maybe an offense defense substitution. So I wouldn't even worry too much about that.
John?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play, like, knowing Dwayne Casey well enough. I think that they don't usually bring players in like this in the middle of the season. And, you know, Masai Ujiri broke, you know, that streak by bringing him in, but I don't think Dwayne Casey's going to break his by playing him that much. So he kind of is that 10th guy on the bench. He'll move back. I think we'll probably see Bebe more than we see Thompson. I mean, Thompson was in street clothes last night. I just don't see him playing that much. And I think especially come playoff time when the rotation tightens, he's just going to be break in case of emergency.
Yeah, I kind of agree there. Although, I mean, it'd be nice if you wanted to just sort of get, you know, collectively get those front court guys a bit of rest. I mean, they haven't played a ton of minutes, but if you wanted to sort of, you know, coast to the end of the regular season here, I wouldn't mind seeing him just to see what he can do, right?
Sure, yeah.
Put him next to, like, Patterson. I think that's probably his best fit, actually, if you play Thompson as a center next to Patterson. That might make a bit of sense. But, yeah, Biombo's a lot better, especially this year. Valanciunas is obviously better. And Bebe just does different things. It has a bit of an offensive touch that Jason Thompson just doesn't have. It'd be nice to see him, you know. It's just because he's a better defender than Scola, and Scola's defense, I feel like, is a big, you know, genesis of a lot of the problems they've had. It just sort of spirals out of control after you get away from him. But, like, I don't know. It'd be nice to see Thompson get a little bit. I don't think he will, as you guys have mentioned. Do you guys want to wrap this up? We'll get to some questions on the other side.
Sure.
All right, cool. We'll be back in just a second here with your long line of kind of absurd questions and a couple of legitimate ones. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with Russell Peddle and John Godis. We're going to answer some of your questions because there isn't a whole lot else to talk about, but we have enough here that we should be able to give you a nice, full, long segment full of nonsense. First question is actually, like, legitimate. This is from EDM Canada, at EDM _Canada. If we don't re-sign DeMar DeRozan, should the Raptors go aggressively after Batum and Evan Fournier? And if so, for how much? I have an unrealistic, positive outlook on Fournier. I want to hear your thoughts on him, considering his age. He is just 23. I like Evan Fournier. He's been pretty good this year. I think he's kind of cooled down a little bit from his super hot start. But I don't know. This is an interesting question, because I don't think that DeRozan's going anywhere. I think unless something terrible happens in the playoffs, I think he's probably going to stick around. But yeah, I mean, Batum and Fournier would be nice to. They both can shoot. Batum has shown this year that he can be a real playmaker. Russell, what do you think about that question?
I mean, I like both Batum and Fournier, but it's funny how much of a 180 I've kind of done on the idea of like pay DeRozan whatever money he wants type thing.
Yeah,
but
let's listen to episode 3.
Yeah, really. But you know, I don't feel like even the combination of those two is necessarily going to fill the void overall. I wouldn't prefer that option, so to speak. I think I would be okay with it as a alternative. If that, like, I mean, I think that would be like a decent consolation prize if you strike out on like a major free agent, right? Because
I mean,
if they don't give DeRozan the max, you got to think that. I mean, they obviously own his rights, but they're going to go after someone big, right?
Well, that's the thing is Batum's like what, the third or fourth best free agent on the market.
That's it, yeah, but I mean, yeah. Like, I would hope that they would if they can't. Like a first choice, if they can't get DeMar re-signed, would be to go after Horford, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, and I mean, I don't really have no idea what that's gonna happen. What's gonna happen? I mean, you've seen like Zach Lowe's talking about like Orlando as a Horford team, which is super weird. But like,
yeah, I don't
maybe if they do that, Evan Fournier becomes expendable for them. Who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, I'd be okay with that. I think that's a cool. A cool combo. Like, yeah, I mean, Evan Fournier is definitely a rotation player. He's shown this year, and Batum is a great multi-tool guy to have as your, you know, your third or fourth option on a team. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess, John, let's go to you, John, first. What would you think about this?
Yeah, I think that they would have to go after those two guys aggressively if they let DeMar go. I'm with you guys, though. I'd think that they pay whatever it costs to keep DeRozan this year, because that feels kind of like, you know, the Hawks win 60 games, they lose Carroll in the off season, and then they kind of retool with lesser guys, and it just hasn't worked for them. I think that if you have the opportunity to keep a star player and they're playing at the peak of their powers like DeRozan is, I think you really have to pay whatever they want to be paid. Mm-hmm. And that fifth year is going to be really big for DeRozan too. In his decision to re-sign anything with any team, and I think he's got enough draw here to keep him here with the year or not, but obviously that's helpful. I think that if they miss out on him, they have to aggressively go after guards like those two, and that's a serviceable solution, I would say. But I would hope that they pay DeRozan his money.
Me too.
Yeah,
I think an option that's not being talked about, like Batum has come up because of that whole story where he was supposedly expressing like he had interest in Toronto. Like, so that's like one that people look at as his replacement. Like, what do you guys think of the idea of Chandler Parsons?
I'm not that high on him.
I don't really? Mind him.
See, I would take him over Batum.
Oh, I would take Batum over Parsons. I think Batum's a way better playmaker. I think he's shown that this year. I don't know. I think we're kind of underselling Batum. Like, that guy's going to – and, I mean, the biggest question here, I think, is, like, would the Raptors even have enough money to get both Fournier and Batum without shipping out some significant contracts? They'd probably have to get rid of, like, a Terrence Ross, who might become superfluous if you have Evan Fournier on the roster anyway, right?
And, well, I mean, another obstacle we're not talking about is Fournier's a restricted free agent.
Exactly, right? And, I mean – they let Kyle O'Quinn go last year as a restricted free agent. Who knows like what their plan is there. They seem to have some big designs on getting a free agent to sign there or two. But I mean, I think Batum's probably going to command north of $20 million a year. And then probably. Fournier as a restricted free agent, I mean, that guy's going to get at least the Terrence Ross deal, you would think, based on the year he's had. Mm-hmm. Probably more than that because of the way the cap's going. I mean, you're probably looking at like $15 million a year for Fournier, so the Raptors might not even be able to get both. That's kind of a dream scenario, I guess. I mean, they could probably move it. If they didn't re-sign DeRozan, they could probably move. Like, I'm just eyeballing the cap sheet here. Hackett's probably going crazy right now. But like, if you were to like you could probably, you know, not bring back DeRozan, renounce his rights or whatever, and then trade Ross, and then maybe you could fit them both, but then I'm not sure that makes you any better. It's just sort of putting two super role players in for DeRozan, who's got that star power. Good question, though. Thanks for the question at EDM Canada. Next question is from, well, Edwin says, give me some Raptors news. Basic copyright infringement. And that's not a question. This one's from Asad Alvi at Swar Lasers. Which Raptor would you most like to hear an R&B album from? John, I'll let you go first.
Oh, for sure, Corey Joseph.
Why Corey Joseph?
I think that he just has the R&B personality. He's a fashionable guy, and I would like to hear him do an R&B album.
Russell?
That's Bruno. The correct answer. There's no other correct answer.
Bruno would be damn adorable.
Yeah, like a Bruno Bebe collab album would be... Oh, man.
I feel like the answer to all these silly questions, like who... Who would you have in your boy band? Who would you have as your R&B singer? Like, it's just always Bruno and Babe.
I think Patrick Patterson could do something good, too. He's kind of got a Jamie Foxx vibe to him.
I suppose so.
I don't know. He seems, like, worldly and... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway.
Clearly a bunch of guys here who know R&B music.
Damn right I know R&B music. Today I listened to... I didn't listen to it. I was looking for songs to play. Because we were going with the theme of upsets, because there was lots of upsets this weekend with UFC and everything on the radio show, and I was looking up songs with that subject matter, and Unpredictable by Jamie Foxx and Luda came up. So listen to that today.
Classic song. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know it before today either, so it's all good. next question is from Josh Priemski from Raptors Republic and At The Hive. Who is the first to be eaten on an uninhabited island? I had to clarify with him and say, is this for the Raptors or for podcast hosts? He said, if you're willing, do both. So that's where we're at. We're going to do both. Let's start with the Raptors. Who is the first? Let's go first and last to be eaten on an uninhabited island. And I'm going to throw in... which Raptor would you want to have as, like, your survival buddy?
Man, this is tough.
Okay, John, you go first. We'll go with the first eaten first.
First eaten. I'm going to go off the grid and say Jonas Valanciunas.
That's my answer.
Because he, you know, he's always screaming when he gets, like, not fouled in the paint. Like, you know that he's just going to get... he's just gonna get discouraged and get killed right away. Last is obviously Biombo. Survivor buddy is Corey Joseph, because we're really connecting, I feel like, in this episode. What was the other question? Podcast host, definitely Harsh.
Although you wouldn't want to eat him, because he doesn't eat meat, so there's not much, like, there's not much to him.
Yeah, it's just shit candy bars.
and shit fruit. So much honeydew. Okay, we'll stop the cannibalism talk. I guess we won't. Russell, your answers, let's go.
they should all be the same. I mean, they're only...
they basically were. Like, Valanciunas was my answer, too, although I was going to say Scola, because if, like, you know, if he had to run away from people as they were trying to get him and he had to jump over something, then it would be done. It'd be a done deal.
his hair would get in his face too.
Yeah, that's true. Plus, you know, he's been eating. What was I going to say then? Sorry. That's my train of thought, because I can't wrap my head around this.
He's been eating Argentinian beef his entire life.
There we go. There's something along those
Luis
lines.
Luis Scola does not eat beef. Have you seen the stories about him? He has a controlled diet to the max.
I thought he was a gaucho. I guess not.
No, naps the same time every day. He works out at the same time every day. He's got the most control over his life of any NBA player. It's both impressive and sad.
I think my survival buddy would be DeMar DeRozan. I think he just works really hard at everything, and he'd really, you know, he'd figure out a lot of stuff, and he just seems like a cool dude to hang out with, you know? Like, he seems really nice, and he's dedicated and loyal, and I think that would all go over well. Because
who gets eaten first on the podcast?
Me, for sure. I'm the slowest and meatiest of all of us. For... So, which is, you know, I would need a guy like Damar as my survival buddy because otherwise I have no hope of survival.
Oh, man. Okay, so my first to be eaten is Jason Thompson. There's no emotional connection yet. He's the easiest that they can just be like, all right, sorry, man. Like, we gotta do this. Sorry, Jason. Plus, he's sitting on the bench. He's like veal in that sense, where he's just like in a cage, not moving, and just becoming delicious. This podcast has gone
survival, down. Not Silence of the Lambs.
I feel like this podcast is going to be used as evidence someday, and I'm going to test it. I don't want to.
Okay, my survival buddy is Damari Carroll. If I ever need to fashion a raft to get off the island, we can just cut his hair and tie it together. That's our
Also, very good for writing out SOS messages because he only types in caps.
Oh my god. What was the other one we were looking at?
Podcast host.
No, survival buddy, last eat.
Survival buddy, worst, best.
The last person eaten is probably, I'll say Kyle, because he's skinny and not desirable to eat anymore.
That's probably the best answer.
And then from the podcast, probably me, so you can get my garbage panda takes out of your ears quickly. I'll forfeit myself to you guys. Josh, that might be the best question we've ever had on the podcast, and also the worst. So, thank you.
This one from definition of best, but anyway, continue.
This one from young Mitch Robson. He's another candidate too. If he's on the island, like he does, like he's younger. He's got less to live for.
I have no idea what he looks like.
Look at his Twitter picture.
I guess.
I guess he's a fake mustache in it, so it doesn't really help. But. Okay, Mitch asks, OUA Final Four picks. The Final Four is Carleton, Ottawa U, Windsor, and Ryerson. John, you go.
I don't watch the OUA, but I don't know. Watch out for the Canada West, baby. Here we come.
That was not an answer, but okay.
I don't live there. Why would I watch your basketball?
Well, just throw out an answer.
Waterloo.
They're not in it.
Oh, man. But okay.
I just gave you who was in it.
I wasn't listening.
Oh, man. This is off the rails. Russell, who you got?
What's an OUA?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Mitch. I mean, me and Mitch had a nice conversation this week about CIS basketball, and I brought my Canada West knowledge for however limited it is, and he talked about OUA, and there was really no crossover because...
No Venn diagram there?
Yeah, because I don't care about Ontario, and he doesn't care about the you know, Western Canada. So,
well, no one smart.
And I'm from the East, so I don't care about any of you.
Does McGill have a team?
They're not in OUA.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're Canada East.
That's not a thing.
They play up with Concordia and St. FX and Dal. But anyway, my pick is Carleton because, of course, it's Carleton. Best. Basketball program in North America. So
I lived at Carleton for a summer.
Oh yeah.
I guess I'll pick them.
Yeah. Okay.
They're good, apparently, right?
Next up, Mitch asks. Jordan Henry asks. He also goes to Ryerson with Mitch. Canada West Final Four picks.
Oh, nice.
It's Calgary, Manitoba, and whatever TRU is versus UBC.
No, Regina. Wait, is that over now? It is over now. That's the Final Four. So we've got to pick both sides?
Yes.
So who's playing Manitoba?
Calgary.
Oh, Calgary's going to win that. Thomas Cooper is probably the best player in the country. if they make it, and they probably will to the CIS, you can watch him kill everybody and not pass the ball. And then the other side is TRU and...
UBC.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. Probably UBC. They've got more size, but... I don't know. That's kind of a watch because they're both going to lose to Thomas Cooper and the Calgary Dinos.
What is TRU?
Thompson Rivers University.
That is not a thing.
It is, it's not a very good place to go.
Oh, okay. Russell, you're up.
I don't know a single player on either of those teams. I don't have any.
But you know Thomas Cooper.
I've heard of them, as in I just heard of them.
Hey, I worked 11 Manitoba Bisons games this year. I've saw these people in the flesh, and I didn't even pick them. So that says a lot about Thomas Cooper.
You guys are much better Canadians than I am. Next question.
I'm going with Calgary to beat UBC.
Thomas Cooper.
Next question. I think it's our last question. This comes from Maroon. What will this home stretch reveal about the Raptors that wasn't already evident this year, if anything? I don't really know where to go with that. John, you go.
Okay, so they got Brooklyn, Atlanta, Miami, and Chicago. What will be proven? That I can go to a Raptors game because I'm going to Saturday's game. That they really can play just as bad on defense as they did last year.
Russell?
Well, so far they're 2-1 on this homestand, so it's not actually going that badly, and they're going to beat the Nets. I would hope. I think if anything on this trip, they got three teams there that are like playoff teams in the East. I think they have a good chance to prove that they've surpassed the Hawks. The Hawks were like the 30, like that team last year where they were the 60-win team in the first seed, and the Heat and Bulls are both teams that have kind of been a thorn in the Raptors' sides, and seems like a team that would beat them in a playoff series. I think it's a chance to prove that they're the better of those three teams.
Mm-hmm. We might be misreading this question. It might be referring to like the home stretch of the season. If that's the case, my answer is it revealed that Damari Carroll is very important to what this team wants to do.
That's a great
and,
answer.
Yeah.
I think it'll reveal that the concerns about the defense right now are kind of overblown, because I think it'll kind of regress to the mean.
Good call, John.
That they can beat the Bulls. Godspeed.
Yes.
I hope that's really the most important game left on the schedule, because you have to get over the mental hump, because there's a very real chance that you could meet them in the first round.
Dude, what is with the fear mongering on the broadcast every night now? It's like they could play the Bulls, and that's a terrifying matchup.
They do that every year. They talk about second round
matchups and crap.
Yeah. And every year we play the team that they fearmonger. Like, they fearmongered Brooklyn, they fearmongered Washington, and now they're fearmongering Chicago, so we're definitely going to play Chicago.
So everyone's going to get mentally prepared for a sweep, yeah.
I'm not even, like, getting into the previewing who they're going to play in the first round, because there's, like, eight possibilities, so.
Yeah, isn't that your beat?
It is usually my beat, but, like, I'm not touching it with a 10-foot pole this year, so we'll get to it later on. I think that'll do it for the questions, boys. This was a eye-opening and interesting segment. We'll be back in just a second here with a very fun episode sponsor here on the headquarters. I'm leaving that in.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with Russell Peddle and John Godis wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This week's episode of the headquarters is brought to you by Oliver Miller, a guy who played for the Raptors when I was too young to remember him. I'm guessing John's kind of in the same boat, yes?
This is an exclusively Russell Peddle segment.
Yeah, so this came up today because we were talking about it at work today because of the Raptors win over the Bulls being brought up again because of the Lakers beating the Warriors. And I was looking up, we've done that game on this podcast before in our that random Raptors game segment, which we'll get to in a minute here. And Oliver Miller was part of that team. One of the seven players who beat the 96 Bulls. Russell, we're going to defer to you here. What are your favorite memories of Oliver Miller? You seem to have one particular game that stands out.
There's not a bigger Oliver Miller fan, I'm sure of it, than me. but it's funny because the year that I actually got into basketball was the, like, had to do with the 92-93 Suns team. Like, the first basketball game I ever watched on TV, like, actually paid attention to was a Suns game. And I just fell in love with Charles Barkley, and he's my all-time favorite player. And, of course, Oliver Miller was, like, played 20 minutes per game for that Suns team, and like even like their finals run against the Bulls, like he was a big part of that team. So when the NBA expanded to Toronto and Vancouver, and the Toronto team like got all like traded for Oliver Miller later. Did they trade for him or they signed him? I can't remember how they got him.
I do not know.
Only you would know that.
But it would have been, let me think now. Drafted by the
Toronto. It was like mid-season of the first season, right?
It was the expansion draft. That's what it was. He was
okay.
So they picked up Oliver Miller, and I was like, oh my God, like a player I know is on the Raptors. and of course, I was only young at that time, like a young whippersnapper. Obviously, you guys were like embryos, but the thing I remember about him the most, apart like of being a Raptor, is that the first professional basketball game that I ever went to was a Raptors game versus Grant Hill's Pistons. Really like Damon Stoudemire, Marcus Camby, like really like that expansion team, basically. I think it was in 96 or 97 that I went. Anyway, the Raptors lost, but I remember that game very, very well because I feel like the last, if I remember this correctly, and again, I was only like 13 or 14 at the time, but the it came down to a final shot, and instead of like someone like Damon Stoudemire, who of course was quite good and a good shooter, or even someone like, I guess at the time, someone like, I guess, there were probably a lot of good shooters on the team then. I'm trying to remember who they were. Like Walt Williams, I guess, would have been on the team then. Instead of going to one of those guys, I remember Oliver Miller taking the final shot. Like, obviously, it was a broken play, but I remember the disappointment of my first Raptors game being a loss and coming out, and Oliver Miller missed shot. I want to say it was a three-pointer even, and he probably didn't take many three-pointers in his career, but it was one of those things where I was so excited because I liked Oliver Miller. And I don't know, maybe just as a pudgy kid growing up and a you know, a basketball player, I looked at him and said, like, yeah, it could work out for chunky guys. So,
yeah, you talk about Steph Curry being the everyman that everyone can aspire to be because everyone can shoot threes.
Every guy with a beer gut and
yeah, look at a picture of Oliver Miller and tell me you can't be an NBA player.
Yeah, it's amazing that he had like an 11-year career, or something along those lines. I'm. It's funny because he's really stuck with me as someone that, like, I remember playing NBA Live and like feeding the ball to him in the post because he was so big, and like just I have a weird connection to Oliver Miller. So when you mentioned that he was going to be the episode sponsor, I got legitimately more excited than I'm willing to admit.
Oliver Miller, by the way, in parts of three seasons with the Raptors, averaged 9.4 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.8 assists.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad at all. He shot just over 50%. Not bad at all. Pretty solid. His best season came in 95-96 with the Raptors, where he had 12.9 points, 7.4 boards, shot 52%, 52.6. Pretty solid. That was the expansion year. He was clearly one of their best players. So let's get to this game that you mentioned, Russell. I've dug it up here on Basketball Reference. I think it's the one. The Raptors played the Detroit Pistons on February 16th, 1997. The Pistons were very good. They were 37-13 after this win. The Raptors went to 17-33. The Pistons won 92-89. In a close game, as you said. Oliver Miller did not take a three-pointer in this game, but it might have been a long two or something. He was 0-for-4 and played only 11 minutes, so it's amazing that he was out there in crunch time. But let's go through this team here and see if you can name everyone. You've named like four or five of the guys already, so you should be able to get this, I would think. And John, there's a couple of guys here that you should be able to get as well.
Damon Stoudemire.
Yes.
I'll let John get a couple because I could probably finish it off because this is a game that I was like, yeah, I mean, it obviously meant a lot to me. It was my first professional basketball game. I could probably name the guys in the Pistons too, but
right.
But Damon Stoudemire,
yes. Oliver Miller is one.
Oh yeah, Oliver Miller.
I think he didn't really have a big impact in that game in any way, shape, or form, if I remember correctly.
I remember Marcus Camby.
Yep.
Okay, that's all I'm going to get.
Okay. Go ahead, Russell. There's six guys left.
Okay.
You've mentioned a couple of them.
Walt Williams, I remember actually having a good game. Like, he stood out.
Yeah, he was the leading scorer. He had 22 points on 8 of 17 shooting for 3 of 5 from 3. Mm-hmm. Not bad. 5 assists.
I remember Popeye Jones being there because his picture came up when it came up on the Jumbotron at one point. I was terrified to see what he looked like.
Shout out to Seth Jones.
I want to say that Hubert Davis was there because I was trying to think of another.
Wow.
I was trying to think of another good shooter, and he would have.
I was so ready to give you the Quebec chicken chain for Hubert Davis. Yeah. Okay. You have three left.
Three left. Doug Christie.
Two of them. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Doug Christie. Two of them, including Christie, were in the Bulls game that they won the year before.
Oh, yeah. Carlos Rogers then would be.
Yep. There you go. One left. He played 20 minutes. He went three for four from the field, 7 points, 11 rebounds.
Oh, God. I'm drawing a blank here. Let me
think a guy who the Boston Celtics drafted this year.
Well, obviously, that year. Okay.
Like this season, like this just past year.
Oh, Rozier.
What's his first name? As always, this is exhilarating podcast.
Yeah, I've hated this game from the first time we played it, and you just insist on doing it.
People, like I've said before, the only comments in the iTunes page are like, yeah, we love that game. Keep playing it. So just doing what the people want, man.
We have comments on the iTunes page?
We have three.
Oh, man.
And five reviews.
We must be getting close to getting a sponsor here.
No, we had the 3 and 5 reviews like the first week. We haven't gotten any since.
Oh, so. Damn.
Yeah. My mom stopped doing it.
it was Cliff Rozier.
Yes. All right. That is this game gets sadder and sadder. I don't think I've come to a game where the Raptors were above 500 yet.
I'm not gonna struggle through all the Pistons, but I want to say how cool it was. I was to be at a game when with Grant Hill and Joe Dumars when they were on the
Pistons. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Like
Lindsey Hunter as well.
Oh yeah.
Michael Curry, future Raptor.
Nice.
Aaron McKee.
Wow.
Eric? Theo Ratliff.
Theo Ratliff.
That's a guy who I
star Theo Ratliff.
He was an all-star? He was an all-star. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that the same year Jamal McGlure was an all-star?
It was.
That is a weird year. Yeah, there everyone gets hurt?
A lot of injury replacements, yeah. And, of course, the center position. Like once you get down to like the sixth best center in the Eastern Conference here.
Is this Antonio Davis's year, too?
It is, yeah.
Wow. Hey, he only had 12.4 and 8.3 and shot 49%.
Those are Oliver Miller numbers. Everything comes full circle.
Those are like identical to those numbers in the expansion year. All right, boys. This has been an experience.
Been
if they don't let us do it again, I blame Josh's question about the cannibalism on the island. But all right. Thank you so much for listening to the headquarters. Anything coming out from you guys on the site?
I'm coming to Toronto, baby. Like I'm signing autographs in the ACC foyer.
Yes.
If you want to meet me, just look for me, yell my name. I'll probably be around.
Yeah, it's a very small town, Toronto, so you'll be good. Just yell John's name.
Yeah, tweet me and let me know your location. And
he's the only John, so.
That's right.
Yeah. you're coming down for the Miami game. Hopefully we'll meet up that day and we'll do a live podcast. Probably not. We'll probably just drink some beer. Yeah.
how many writers do you have showing up for your meetup?
A lot less than we thought.
Yeah. Well, zero for the pregame one. And it was just going to be me and Daniel. Yeah. So we're doing something postgame, I think.
Okay. I got two. So I'm very invested in how many when I came. For Montreal, so I'm very invested to see how many you get. Because I want
to come to our
popularity contest.
Yeah,
absolutely, it is. I want to. Yeah, I mean, the next big one we do, I might actually make an effort to get out for it.
Good Good stuff.
But the are you gonna ask me the same question? Because it's
Dinos and Digits.
Yeah, same, well, I'm doing the game thread recap for the Brooklyn game tomorrow night.
Cool.
So that should be terrible. And the Dinos and Digits on Thursday. I'm probably going to look at some defensive numbers, but we'll see where it goes. That always kind of just comes out organically. I don't really have a plan. And then of course the fantasy FanDuel thing on Friday. So.
Cool. I will be at that game tomorrow. I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm not even scheduled to write anything. So I'm just going to root around. I'm probably going to write about the defense on Wednesday. So I'll try to get some stuff tomorrow, whatever I can. Doubtful I can get anything post-game. But, and I will also be at the Miami game doing that game thread and recap while John is looking for friends.
They're not my friends. They're my fans. Once again, that's at John Godes, JohnGaudes. You can actually tag tweets with your location now if you'd prefer to do that.
And use hashtag the HQ because no one else does.
Don't do that. It's my meetup. It's not related to the podcast.
Everything you do is related to the podcast.
That's a lie.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I'm going to write about the defense this week. A couple other things coming down with recaps and everything. So keep an eye on that. You can follow me at Woodley Sean. John is, you just heard the Twitter account from me. So I don't need to reiterate. Russell Pedal is at Rusty Pedal Bike. Crusty Pedal Bike, if you listened to two episodes ago when he got upset about us talking about Pixar movies. You can follow Rappers HQ at Rappers HQ. You can follow the headquarters on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review, add to our tiny amount of reviews. We'd love to see some more. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week if they let us come back. You've been listening to the headquarters.